Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussion will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I'd like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Given the fact that we are quickly saying goodbye to summer. Of course, some would say that Labor Day in summer, but not so. Around the 20th or 22nd of September is when we end summer. So I thought we would read a little essay written by Mary Lou Henner. Of course, Mary Lou Henner was in the TV show Taxi, and she's a very accomplished actress. And she gives her expert advice for an unforgettable season entitled Total Recall. Mary Lou writes, "What have you done to make this a memorable summer? It's not too late. Fall doesn't officially start until September 22nd, and with global warming, it feels like summer well into October. But start now. Summer goes even faster than that slippery slope between Halloween and New Year's. It's a blur unless you really stop to open your senses and take in what's going on around you. I've been teaching classes in memory for many years now as one of 12 documented cases of HSAM, which means Highly Superior Autobiographical Memory. I've always been interested in helping people with their autobiographical memories. I may be able to recall details of every day of my life, but through teaching others, I have come to realize that everyone has a dominant sense that helps them record, retain, and retrieve their autobiographical memories. This dominant sense guides you without your even realizing it. Have you ever heard a song and you're instantly transported to another time and place? Or see an object that reminds you of a day in your life you thought was long forgotten? Or smell something that takes you back to your childhood? That's your dominant sense doing your memory work for you. Even if you answer yes to each of these questions, there is always one sense that guides you the most, be it sight, sound, touch, taste, or smell. Besides recommending that you scroll through the movie montage of your day while brushing your teeth at night for 2 minutes or 10 seconds, I encourage you to play to your strengths and tap into your dominant sense throughout the day. For example, sight. Take a mental snapshot every once in a while to really let it sink in where you are and what you're doing. Sound. Periodically, do a sound check. Close your eyes and take in the ambient room tones. Record in your mind what you're hearing or saying. Touch. Record your day in a tactile way as often as possible. Walk barefoot or find a texture that identifies that day for you. Taste. Taste your day by not only savoring the food you eat, but also by the flavor of what you experience. And smell. Close your eyes and breathe in what's around you. We smell people usually have great memories because the olfactory system is located near the memory base. And if you really want to remember what you did this summer, spend at least 5 minutes at the end of each day recording your thoughts, what you learned, your feelings, struggles, victories, and your plans for the next day. Ask often, what am I actually doing? And what would I like to remember? Then, at the end of summer, you will. Interesting. Total Recall the actress and memory expert Mary Lou Henner offered advice for an unforgettable season. Very interesting. Very interesting. We should try it. Hopefully this radio broadcast will be memorable for you. You know, of course, we mentioned last week, and we will continue to mention throughout the fall season here, we got a press release from our good friend Pam Rose over at Swirl's Cupcakes, which is located right around the corner from the old, I say the old because it's moved, Children's Memorial Hospital at 705 West Belden. Their phone number is 773-404-2253, swirlscupcakes.com. Kick off a happy bear season at Swirl's with an Izzy Bear Cupcake. Through October 6th, Swirl's Cupcakes will be selling our Izzy Bear Banana Chocolate Chip Gummy Bear Cupcake, with all proceeds benefiting the Israel Adonijah Foundation, committed to connecting children and families in underserved communities. Israel will also be coming into Swirl's to mix up a batch of his custom cupcakes. We're thrilled to welcome him into our shop. Stay tuned for pictures from his visit, and be sure to stop in to try a delicious Izzy Bear cupcake while they're here. And, of course, go Bears. And, again, for information, log on to Swirls, S-W-I-R-L-Z, cupcakes.com. For information, 773-404-2253 at 705 West Belden. Ask for Pam Rose. Mention our name, and she certainly will take care of you. Great cupcakes. Best cupcakes in Chicago. The fall theater season is well on its way. And, of course, starting out at the Paramount Theater is a great series of four shows to follow up the great series of four shows that the Paramount had last year with My Fair Lady and Joseph and Chorus Line and Hair. This year, through September 30th, Grease. It's the ultimate celebration of the teen years. Set in the hip 50s, everyone has reported to class. Danny Zuko, Sandy, Frenchie, Rizzo, Kanicki, and the rest of the Rydell student body. From the poodle skirts and slick back hair to the fast cars and faster lifestyle, Grease isn't just the word. It's the show that you'll have you dancing your seat and singing your car for days. Featuring hit after hit, including Summer Nights, Beauty School Dropout, Hand Jive, You're the One That I Want, and, of course, Grease Lightning, along with those big, glorious, and action-filled dance numbers. You'll want to be there when the curtain goes up on the 2012-2013 Paramount Broadway season. Of course, a great musical. Danny Zuko, Vince Fontaine, Teen Angel, remember that? Great movie. And even a greater musical. Of course, it's about, we were talking with a group of guys, we were out at the Sox game the other night watching Detroit beat the Sox. Greg Ewer and Bob Goransky and Gavin Staley and myself. We're talking about Grease because Bob is from the North Side, Taft High School, which is right here by our studio up here in the North Side. And that's where this was originally idea germinated. Jim Jacobs and Warren Casey were students at Taft, and this is kind of a semi-autobiographical, fictionalized account of their days in high school, which is kind of interesting, Taft High School. Of course, after Grease, Annie, one of the great classics. Don't let the red curls, freckles, and dress fool you. That adorable little girl is a true adventure. And Annie will be at the Paramount Theater out in Aurora from November 21st through December 30th. And directed by Rachel Rockwell. We have Rachel on the show a few weeks ago, and she added with her, of course, a very, very talented lady. After Annie, another great classical. Remember Robert Preston, The Music Man. And again, directed by Rachel Rockwell. Boy, she's a busy lady. Meredith Wilson's great musical about the traveling salesman Harold Hill in River City. And that's from January 16th and to February 3rd. And finally, finishing up, directed by our good pal Jim Cordy, who is the artistic director of the Paramount Theater, Fiddler on the Roof. What a classic that is, from March 6th to the 24th. And Fiddler was, of course, nominated for 10 Tony Awards and won 9 of them, including the best musical. It was a great movie and just a heartwarming musical. Fiddler on the Roof. So it's a great season at Paramount. In fact, we're going to try to get Tim Rader, the executive director, on our show next week or the week after. So Grease, Annie, The Music Man, and Fiddler on the Roof. Another great season. Boy, it's terrific the way Tim has brought great Broadway theater out to the Paramount Theater in Aurora. It's a beautiful venue in the Fox River. And if you have the opportunity, make sure you get out there and see one of the shows. It doesn't last too long. You're only 2 or 3 weeks, but very worthwhile, very worthwhile. Of course, the kids are back to school, and if you'll notice that the kids nowadays don't know what the kids knew 10 years ago or 20 years ago or 30 years ago from the standpoint of contemporary history. And the class of 2016, that's the graduates who are freshmen this year in college, is in a class of its own. In other words, old references mean little to them. If you've never seen an actual airline ticket, no, that's not the same as a boarding pass, never mailed a first-class letter for less than 30 cents, and never known Los Angeles to have a pro football team, then you might be an incoming college freshman. So says the latest Beloit College Mindset List, which attempts to summarize what members of the class of 2016 know and what they don't, by referencing the cultural touchstones that have come and or gone in their lifetime. The list, just released, is a collection of references to pop culture. Justin Bieber and Dakota Fanning are their age. Politics, a woman has run the U.S. Senate Department for much of their lives. And technology, their world has always existed in cyberspace. To members of the class of 2016, many of whom were born in 1994, the graduate protagonist Benjamin Braddock could be their grandfather. Holy cats. Other points on the list show not just the passage of time, but also the evolution of behavior. This year's college freshmen would likely think it strange for the White House security to greet a group of gay elected officials by wearing rubber gloves that happened during President Clinton's first term. A Clinton spokesman later apologized. Beloit College English and Humanities Professor Tom McBride and former College Public Affairs Director Ron Neef have compiled the list annually since 1998. Very interesting. Every year they come out with this list on what a college freshman should have known or would have known or would not have known. As for larger trends among this year's college freshmen, McBride said one is clear. They've come into their teenage years at a time when there are real doubts about America's future, about whether America will continue to be a number one power, about crushing debt, about recovery from the economic recession. This is a generation for whom D-E-B-T, debt, is going to be a four-lettered word. So some of the things that an incoming freshman would or wouldn't know. To those entering college this fall as freshmen, Nirvana's Kurt Cobain has always been dead. Singer committed suicide in April of 1994. In the minds of incoming college freshmen, people don't carry luggage, they roll it. They don't have new encyclopedias. Isn't that the truth? You never see an Encyclopedia Britannica or a World Book Encyclopedia. Everything's on the internet. The Real World TV show has always stopped getting polite and started getting real. Los Angeles has never had a pro football team. Robert De Niro isn't the young Vito Corleone in The Godfather 2 or Jimmy Conway in Goodfellas. He's Ben Stiller's father-in-law in Meet the Parents, so they've never seen him in the classic Godfather 2. Bill Clinton is a senior statesman, not a recent former president. In the minds of incoming college freshmen, they had Furbies. And Star Wars was always just a film, not a defense strategy. And finally, and maybe most importantly, in the minds of incoming college freshmen, there have always been blue M&Ms, but no tan ones. Interesting. You know, of course, we see the Cubs and the Sox going after it, and we're certainly pulling for the Cubs that they can achieve the milestone of losing 100 games. We'll see how that happens. There's how many, 20 or less left, and they need to lose another 10 or 12. Go Cubbies. Sox in a pennant race with the Detroit Tigers. Neck and neck to the wire. Can they do it? I don't know. They have a pitching staff that sometimes gets a little shaky, and a bullpen that I don't know where these guys come from. They say they don't have a group of people in the minor leagues, but I think they're all up in the pitching staff on the relief pitchers of the White Sox. The Bears, of course, are going strong. Teacher strike, interesting about the teachers. It's a little bit of personal feeling on that. My feeling, I think, is that it's more or less this is a confrontation between the teachers, their administrative group, and our mayor. I think our mayor kind of drew a line in the sand, and I think rightfully so, because I think there's ways to approach a lot of things. And had the mayor said, you know, what we're going to do is we're going to add, and we'd like to add, some time to the school day, but in his dictatorial style, rather than mandate it, I think it should have been put on the table and discussed in a more democratic way. Might have been received a little better. Because the information that I get, which may or may not be true, but it could be, that this hour represents really free time and lunchtime that the kids did not have before, that they had to include in their academic day and eat during classes and so forth. So given that information, wouldn't you as a parent or wouldn't you as an observer say, well, sure, they should have time, whether it's a half an hour, 45 minutes for lunch, so that they can go back to their studies. I've always been of the opinion that, you know, you give the kids so many studies, and this is going through a Jesuit education and on and on and on, so much work during the day that they come home at night, if they have extracurricular activities, or they don't, and you want them to spend time with their parents, and they have to do 3 hours of homework. Something's wrong with that mentality. Spend time during the day doing that work so they can come home and spend time with their family, whether it's discussing things or maybe even working on some homework themselves. Why have them go home and do it for 3 hours when they're in school for five or six? Spend another hour in school. Give them time to do that homework. Give them time to review the issues or the subjects that the teachers want to teach them. So it's a different little mindset. You know, I see the teachers, and great, great group of people, selfless group of people who are working so hard. If they need to buy crafts or supplies or crayons or paper, out of their own pocket, the money comes to make sure that their kids are satisfied, because it's too much of a hassle to go through the bureaucracy of the school system to do that. If they need to work a few extra hours, time, receive phone calls from the kids afterwards, they're always very eager to do that. Then you have the construction trade, so if you can get 4 hours out of people, it's a miracle. Out of an 8-hour day, which they expect to be paid for, which is something's wrong in that balance, and yet the teachers are maligned because of that. I don't buy that at all. Our teachers are the backbone of this educational system, in conjunction with the parents who should be involved, actively and eagerly, enthusiastically participating. So, we'll see how time goes, and maybe people can put their egos aside and say, you know, what's good for everyone? I know the teachers are looking in that direction. But that's, I'm on my soapbox here, but that's a couple thoughts that I had. Theater season, as I said, is in full swing. It's starting. It's ready to rock and roll. A lot of great theater in Chicago. I mentioned the Paramount Theater. We'll talk about some of the Broadway and Chicago productions coming up. The weather's still a little warm. Get outside. Dine a little al fresco, which means in the outside. A lot of the restaurants have those propane or gas heaters, electric heaters outside. So even when it's a little chilly out, you still can enjoy the weather and enjoy things outside. So if you can, still do that. Very intellectually stimulating show today. There's a new program, new theater at the Drury Lane Water Tower, Broadway Playhouse. Remember the old I Love Lucy show? Well, this is I Love Lucy live on stage, which is going to be a lot of fun. It's kind of, we get a backstage look at what it was like at the Desilu Studios to do the I Love Lucy show and put it on. So it'll be fun. We're talking to Bill Mendieta, who's one of the stars, portrays Desi Arnaz, in fact. We'll talk with him. And, of course, for the intellectual part of our conversation, we'll be talking to Mark St. Germain, who is the playwright who wrote the hit play Freud's Last Session, which has been running at the Mercury Theater for many, many months, and will continue for another couple months. But it's been a great hit there for Walter Stearns and everyone over there. So it'll be fun to talk about him, of course, the conversation between Freud and C.S. Lewis. Intellectual stimulation on the show today. We're going to be playing Ramsey Lewis as our music CD, The Millennium Collection. Great song. You don't hear this a lot, but it's certainly one of Lennon and McCartney's favorites. Julia. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show. Back on the Kevin Moore Show, Julia, Lennon and McCartney. Broadway in Chicago is happy to announce that I Love Lucy, live on stage, the brand new hit musical stage show adapted from the longest running and most beloved television program in history, starring Lucy, Ricky, Fred, and Ethel, America's favorite foursome, will have its Midwest premiere in Chicago at the Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower Place, 175 East Chestnut, through November 11th. Imagine stepping back in time and into the Desilu Playhouse soundstage. It's 1952, and you are a member of the studio audience awaiting the filming of two hilarious and oh-so-familiar I Love Lucy episodes. A charming host entertains and enlightens you to the behind-the-scenes filming process, the 1950s high-fidelity technology, and this brand-new thing called television. The episodes begin, and you witness firsthand the side-splitting antics of that crazy redhead in the Ricardo's New York apartment and thrill to the Cuban sounds of the Ricky Ricardo Orchestra at the famed Tropicana nightclub. In between scenes, the Crystal Tone Singers perform live advertising jingles of the show's newest sponsors in perfect 50s-style harmony. Can you say, Brill Cream? I Love Lucy, live on stage, premiered in Los Angeles 2011 to stellar reviews, prestigious awards, and sold-out crowds. If you're a fan of Lucy, Ricky, Fred, and Ethel, this is a must-see experience. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning star of stage, screen, and television, having appeared in numerous Shakespearean works, including Romeo and Juliet, Twelfth Night, and Hamlet. A versatile actor who has appeared in many different roles and styles. Noted film actor, writer, producer, director, teacher, and mentor, one of the brightest stars in the world of theater and entertainment, now starring in the iconic role of Desi Arnaz in the newest comedy hit, I Love Lucy, live on stage at the Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower Place, 175 East Chestnut, through November 11th. And aligned with us right now is Bill Mendieta. Billy, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you.
Well, it's great to have you, and welcome to Chicago. You enjoying it so far?
I love Chicago. It is an incredible town. Lots of places to eat, lots of things to do. It's so vibrant, a nice city feel. And today they even brought back some nice, it looks like, San Francisco weather here.
Well, you know, of course, as we talked earlier, San Francisco, next to Chicago, is my favorite city. And we had a lot of similarities here, the weather notwithstanding, of course. But what a great role. Ricky Ricardo, do you remember the Lucy show with you and your family when you were younger?
Oh, yeah. I have a very big family, and we're very close. And we loved classic movies and classic television. My parents took us all to to operas and ballets, and took us to black and white films and classic films. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I even remember they brought us to a double feature of Man for All Seasons and Lawrence of Arabia.
Oh, sure,
that's,
yes.
That's how they were.
Yeah.
So they sat us down in front of the television, and whenever we'd watch TV, we'd watch really classic TV. And I Love Lucy was a favorite, and it always made us laugh.
Of course, congratulations are in order. You received the prestigious Broadway World Los Angeles Award for Best Leading Actor in a Musical. So this thing has been received very well, and you're doing a lot of traveling with it, huh?
Yeah, it has been a quite a nice phenomenon. I think the popularity of the show, it's still running. It's still on pretty much in every city you go to. You'll find it. And it's still funny. And so it really hits to an audience, and an American audience, a world audience, that hits to family values and laughter and fun. And underneath it all, there's love, and that always works.
Well, you know, as you say, Billy, there's a timelessness about it. And what is it like to play? You got the accent and everything for Ricky Ricardo?
Yes. Yeah, it's one of the requirements of Ricky Ricardo. He's from Cuba.
It must have been fun. You must have looked at the old reels and watched him the way he was, and kind of adapted a certain lifestyle, of certain vernacular, of course, of what he was doing. And like you say, that it was all in good humor, and certainly everybody loved Lucy, and that was the bottom line.
Yeah, it was. It was nice to watch a lot of the old episodes. Although the director Rick Sparks and the producers stressed that we're not doing imitations of them.
Mm-hmm.
That we're staying true to, you know, Ricky Ricardo and Lucy Ricardo, as opposed to Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz.
Right.
And so there's a point where we watch those because there's some certain expectations that those characters need. But then at a time, we have to let that go and let's see how the characters live through us. And that's been important, and it's been really the joy of doing it live, because we get those moments and those relationships between the characters and the guest stars that come on in, and everything. It just creates such a and the audience too. The audience is an important character to that.
You know, I try to explain a little bit. You can certainly do it better than I. Give us a little background on how you all put it all together.
Oh, OK. Okay. Are you mean the history of the show or the concept?
The concept itself when you're on the stage or you're an audience member watching it.
Well, the audience gets a chance to really experience what it's like to be there at that time in 1951, 1952, mm-hmm. and so on, at a live taping of the live filming of the I Love Lucy show.
Mm-hmm.
And so what that they're a part of the studio audience. They come on, and what happens in what happened in sitcom, and what I Love Lucy really pioneered was the using the three camera shoot, filming in three cameras with a live audience.
Oh, really? So that's a little different than that was the first time that happened.
That was the first time that really happened.
Okay.
Using film cameras to do it in front of a live audience. They did it before, I believe, with Amos and Andy, three camera shoot, but it wasn't in front of an audience.
Mm-hmm.
So they did that so they can do the show in Los Angeles, as opposed to most shows were done in New York, and
okay.
they had to rebroadcast that and through the kinescope process,
mm-hmm.
and which is basically kind of like putting a film camera in front of a TV tube and having that connected. So the quality wasn't as great, but what I Love Lucy did and doing the film cameras, it was it's amazing. So the audience that comes to the show gets to experience that.
Okay.
And they get the joy of experiencing the commercials, live commercials that are sung by the Crystal Tone Singers. And it's really a love letter to I Love Lucy.
Even the commercials become an integral part of the whole show because you see some of the old products like Brill Cream. When's the last time you saw Brill Cream?
No, I never saw Brill Cream.
You might have used it, but your mother probably used it on you.
Know.
Well,
you know, I through the process, I learned a lot about history and the history of our pop culture in doing this. So, yeah, you get the and people who were alive during that time and even young people get the joy of, oh, it brings back memories, I was there. Some audience members were saying, oh, I know all the songs. I remember Halo Shampoo. And
yeah, right, right.
And some of the younger audiences, the kids, they come up and say, hey, I know your lines.
Are your mom and dad still with us?
Yes, they are.
Now, what do they think they've seen the show? They must love it, huh?
They absolutely loved it. They did. They came down to see the production in Los Angeles with some family, and they were proud as punch. They had so much fun. They were laughing, and they gave me a really good compliment. They told me they forgot I was their son.
That's real good acting, Bill.
Right.
You know, it's funny. They're probably saying, this was this great Shakespearean actor. Now he's playing Ricky Ricardo. How does that happen?
I was very grateful for the opportunity. It was a big challenge and a big responsibility because there are really diehard I Love Lucy fans that are coming
out
to see this. And when I got cast and, I was talking with Serena and the other actors. Serena Irwin plays Lucy Ricardo.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just kind of awed by the responsibility that we have. And we have to meet those expectations and still make it be true, as I said before, as actors, and to make them as real people and as if they're seeing it right there and give them the experience of being there. And I think that's something that I Love Lucy fans, you know, that are that weren't at those original filmings get to experience. And I think it's quite a gift to them and to the world.
Well, you get a behind-the-scenes look, basically, being in the audience. And like you say, well, it's a great position to be in. It's sort of a responsibility because people are going to kind of compare you or Lucy with what came before and say, oh, this is kind of cool. He did a great job with it.
Yeah. You know, and, of course, that net comes naturally with it. They come in and they have the expectations. Well, I don't know. You know, of course, nobody could be there can't be another Lucille Ball.
Oh, sure. Right,
not
right.
Another Desi Arnaz. But this is, you know, Serena Irwin doing Lucy Ricardo and Bill Mendieta doing Ricky Ricardo. And to those characters and the situation of the Ricardos, you know, they're struggling to be successful, doing the American dream. He wants to be a successful band leader, and he has an American wife, and she wants to get in show business.
Sure.
And he wants to keep her as an American wife.
Well, you know, this venue you're at the Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower, a great little venue because it gives the intimacy that you need to feel like you're inside one of these audiences. I imagine these studio audiences that they had, there was probably only a couple hundred people in the studio when they were filming these things.
Yeah, that's true. And the theater at the Broadway Playhouse, it's a really beautiful theater.
Yeah, isn't it?
It's, you know, and I sat back and to watch some of the rehearsals from the, even from the back row. There's not a bad seat in there.
Right, right.
And it's really a nice, you know, it serves a lot of people. Still have that intimate feeling, as you said.
Well, I hope you're going to enjoy Chicago in the short time you're being here. Of course, you never know. It might be such a success. You might be here a little longer.
Well, I think they have another show that's booked in the theater after us. So we're booked from as of now till November 11th, and we just started our previews yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And the audiences, Chicago audiences, are great.
That's great.
Very enthusiastic and very appreciative. So.
Where do you go from here?
I go back to Los Angeles.
Oh, good.
And I think there's you know, there has been talk about remounting that production back there. So.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what happens with that.
Well, let's get. I wish you a lot of success with this because people are going to enjoy it. I Love Lucy Live on Stage is more than just the title of our show. It has proven to be a mindset. It's a thought that is nearly spoken aloud by excited audience members as they enter the theater and a feeling they take with them as they leave. More than 60 years after America chose their favorite redhead, this show has created a brand new way for people to love Lucy. TV Guide's William Keck says, I Love Lucy Live on Stage is the most entertaining stage production I've seen in years, including Broadway. The Examiner adds, I frankly cannot remember any performance in any venue in recent time that caused me to laugh so long and so hard. But it also clearly told the story and paid proper homage to the original I Love Lucy. When it ended, I was filled with warmth and joy. Broadway in Chicago is happy to announce that I Love Lucy, Live on Stage, the brand new hit musical stage show adapted from the longest running and most beloved television program in history. Starring Lucy, Ricky, Fred, and Ethel, America's favorite foursome, will have its Midwest premiere in Chicago at the Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower Place, 175 East Chestnut, through November 11th. And on the line with us right now is Bill Mendieta, who portrays Ricky Ricardo in the newest hit comedy, I Love Lucy, live on stage at the Broadway Playhouse. Billy, thanks for taking a little time and chatting with us. I'm going to give a phone number for the theater, which is 312-977-1700. You know, enjoy Chicago when you can here. I know you're going to be very busy, but enjoy our town and its people. I hope you do.
I really do. I already do, and I look forward to enjoying it more. Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks for taking a little time. Thanks, Bill.
My pleasure.
Take care. Bill Mendieta, who portrays Desi Arnaz or Ricky Ricardo with the newest comedy hit, I Love Lucy, live on stage at the Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower Place, 175 East Chestnut, which is one block east of Michigan, through November 11th. A lot of this should be funny. I'm looking forward to the press opening on that and seeing the show bringing back those old memories of Lucy and Ricky and Fred Neffler. Fred Neffler. they were funny. They were funny. We're going to go back to Ramsey Lewis's CD, The Millennium Collection. One of the big hits he had was The In Crowd. It was a Grammy Award and gold record. It was recorded at the Bohemian Caverns in Washington, D.C., live in 1965. It became a great hit. And we'll enjoy it right now. The In Crowd. We'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
Lewis.
The In Crowd. We're back on the Kevin Moore Show. Freud's Last Session will celebrate its 200th performance on Thursday, September 20th at 7:30 at the Mercury Theater, 3745 North Southport, Chicago. Following the performance, audience members will have an opportunity to meet with Mike Nussbaum and Coburn Goss and celebrate the 200th performance. The production has been extended multiple times and is now, unfortunately, is in its final weeks, ending its successful Chicago run on November 11th. Winner of the 2011 Off-Broadway Alliance Award for Best Play, the Midwest premiere of Freud's Last Session has received rave reviews and three Jeff Award nominations, including Best Play. Written by Mark St. Germain under the direction of Tyler Marchant, the production stars local theater legend Mike Nussbaum as Sigmund Freud and Coburn Goss as C.S. Lewis. Freud's Last Session centers on legendary psychoanalyst Dr. Sigmund Freud, who invites the rising academic star C.S. Lewis to his home in London. Lewis, expecting to be called on the carpet for satirizing Freud in a recent book, soon realizes Freud has a much more significant agenda. On the day England enters World War II, Freud and Lewis clash on the existence of God, love, sex, and the meaning of life, only 2 weeks before Freud chooses to take his own. Not just a powerful debate, this is a profound and deeply touching play about two men who boldly address the greatest questions of all time. Mark St. Germain's celebrated new play was suggested by the best-selling book The Question of God by Dr. Armin Nicolai, professor of psychology at Harvard University. On the line with us right now is the award-winning playwright, having won the Outer Critics Circle Award and the Lucille Lortel Award for Dramatic Presentations, winner of the AT&T New Plays Award for his musical theater work, creative consultant for The Cosby Show, accomplished screenwriter, having worked with Richard Gere and Glenn Close, and one of the brightest literary stars in the world of theater. Now celebrating the success of his hit play here in Chicago, Freud's Last Session, running through November 11th at the Mercury Theater, 3745 North Southport. On the line with us right now is Mr. Mark St. Germain. Mark, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Thanks, Kevin. It's great to be here.
Well, it's great to have you, and I think I'd like to start out. As I said, I've seen this a couple times. I've enjoyed it, as has everybody in Chicago practically. How did you come up with the idea?
Well, Dr. Armin Nicolai had a book called The Question of God. And I had been to a program somewhere and saw a copy of the book, and seeing a picture of Freud next to Lewis just struck me as so incongruous. And what he did in the book is he compared the different philosophies of both men. And so I wrote him and called him and said, what if this were the idea that was used in a book to put these, to play, to put these men together on the same stage?
Mm-hmm.
And when he agreed, then I did about a year of research and wrote the play.
You know, you say incongruous, which is very true, because you have Sigmund Freud a few weeks before his suicide in the middle of the London Blitz, who is 83 years old. He's crotchety. He's old. He's fatalistic. And you have C.S. Lewis, a guy half his age, a converted Christian, the embodiment of optimism. And two people like that, so different, you would think, in philosophy, yet certainly in the play, they come together and in their conversation, in their dialogue, in their rhetoric, in their battle of words to an extent, I don't know. Who do you side with? I was kind of siding with C.S. Lewis at the end of the day, actually.
Well, it's interesting. The people who walk in a little predisposed toward Lewis believe that Lewis won the argument, and the same with Freud. And the thing we found most interesting when we did it, first at the Barrington Stage Company in Massachusetts, so we got a letter from a married couple. He was an atheist. She was a believer. And she wrote us and said they went out to dinner after the show, argued for 2 hours in reversed positions.
Oh, really? Interesting. Interesting.
I mean, to me, I kind of plead the fifth.
Because
I try to make it as evenly weighted as possible.
Sure, sure.
I just really felt strongly from the beginning the best plays are about two people who have totally opposite views and both believe they're completely right. And in this case, it fits the bill.
Well, if the definition of theater is to stimulate and engage the audience's creativity, or stimulate and engage the audience's imagination, or to stimulate and engage the audience's intellect, you're successful, Mark, because it certainly does that.
Thank you.
People are enjoying it. Do you get different feelings or different evaluations of this based on the areas of the country or the world that you present this?
Well, that's interesting. I haven't so far. I mean, there's different dynamics
in sure.
different productions.
Sure.
But, I recently saw a production in Buenos Aires that was more physical and just much more heated. I think because the concept of that English politeness just wasn't something that they wanted to deal with.
Sure.
But no, the reactions have fortunately been very good.
You know, we had the opportunity when it first opened to have Carolyn Rossi Copeland on the show to discuss it. And, of course, besides kind of germinating and the ideas of Charles Strauss in our conversation, which I now have become interested in, which Carolyn, of course, is, we've had Coburn Goss on. And you have Mike Nussbaum, who portrays Freud. I don't know if you knew him before, but he's one of the great actors of Chicago, if not the nation.
Well, I didn't know him personally, but I knew his work, and I was thrilled when he wanted to do it.
And, you know, they just play off each other very well. I mean, it's two very well-chosen actors. I know that coming up is the Christmas Schooner at the Mercury Theater, which is a theater which has kind of gone through a regeneration with Walter Stearns at the helm there. This thing could play a little longer, I would think.
I would hope, but I guess it's time for Christmas.
Yeah, right. But you're taking it around the world, are you not?
Well, we are. A lot of the productions I don't know about because it gets licensed through Dramatis Play Service. But the ones that the original producers are involved with, like the Chicago one, and also in Los Angeles, it opens up, I think, mid-January. Mm-hmm. And Judd Hirsch will be playing.
Oh, that's good casting.
Yeah.
That's good casting.
It'll be really interesting.
Yeah. When you were writing this, what was your intention? What was your feeling? What did you want the audience to take other than to stimulate, as I said before, their imagination on this play?
Well, I think it's about things that people don't think about, and or they only think about when there's some kind of an upheaval in their life or a crisis, and then they start thinking, what is the purpose of this? Is there life after death? What is the point of existence? And in this brief amount of time, well, so many of these topics come up. It really is to just, as Lewis says toward the end of the play, to come awake and stay awake. And for that period of time, people think about some of the big questions.
You have worn a lot of different hats, of course, in the literary side of theater and so forth. Had you ever had the opportunity or interest in acting or directing yourself?
I have directed a few of my plays. Mm-hmm. And the difficulty, I think, is that when you're doing a new play, you really want to stand outside of it, be as critical as possible for changes.
Mm-hmm.
So unless the play is really absolutely positively ready to go, and you can concentrate as a director. There is one upcoming that I would like to direct, but I'm not sure. I have to wait till the play is finished to see.
Mm-hmm. As you were honing your craft, of course, in the literary world, who did you look up to, or who did you emulate, or who did you say, I like that style of writer, I like what he's doing, whether it's a novelist, whether it's a fiction writer, whether it's nonfiction writer?
Well, I always loved plays of Brian Friel, plays of Jean Anoui. I always respected James Goldman for being able to work in all forms, musical and plays, and some wonderful films he did. So it was really those influences, even more than more contemporary writers.
You know, you talk about James Goldman. Here's a guy that, if I'm not mistaken, did he not write The Lion in Winter?
Yes, he did.
And probably more than you know. What are some?
Robin and Marion.
Okay, movie. Yeah, right.
A lot of wonderful things.
Right, right. And the kind of work that touches people's hearts and touches people's souls, and there's a timelessness to it. I still watch The Lion in Winter. Maybe it's because of Peter O'Toole or Katharine Hepburn, because you can't take your eyes off the screen because of their acting abilities. But just listening to the dialogue about a play, you know, not dissimilar to what you have in Freud's last session. You have to listen to the words, and some of those you're going to remember, and some, of course, you're not. But those that you remember make a difference in the way you evaluate things, as is evidenced by how people feel when that couple that came out and had dinner.
Right. That's right. And we've had, in many cases, which is very flattering, people come several times to see it, which was really nice. I know when it was running in New York, we would do surveys of who was coming, and was it because of the reviews, was it because of the advertisement, and about 80% was word of mouth.
Wow.
And that was wonderful.
Who portrayed Freud in New York, Mark?
Martin Rayner, who created the role at Harrington Stage Company.
Mm-hmm.
He and Mark Dold did probably 850 performances.
Wow. Well, it's been a lot of fun having it in Chicago as long as it has, and it continues to get extended, and hopefully it'll be back. What's next up for Mark St. Germain?
I am working on a play for the Contemporary American Theater Festival about F. Scott Fitzgerald and Hemingway, and I have a comedy that I wrote with John Marcus that we'll be doing in Atlanta, so it will be definitely a busy year. Right now I'm actually on a rehearsal break from the latest show I did, Dr. Ruth All the Way, which is at the Harrington Stage Company, and has come back for a second run, and then hopefully we'll be able to move it into New York or Chicago or another great theater hub.
Yeah, please come back to Chicago, will you?
I'd love to.
Freud's Last Session, written by Mark St. Germain, explores the conversation that might have passed between founder of psychoanalysis, Dr. Sigmund Freud, and prolific author C.S. Lewis, had they met near the end of Freud's life. Although it deals seriously with many heavy issues such as God, religion, death, sex, and happiness, the play still tends toward the lighthearted and its lively banter between Lewis and Freud. The play is set in the most urgent of settings, just a few scant weeks before Freud's suicide after his long struggle with oral cancer, and right in the midst of World War II, just a year before the London Blitz. The two men knew that at any moment the Germans could bomb them or drop poison gas, and every cough of Freud's could herald the end of his life. However, they still managed to joke around and tease each other between the air raid sirens, radio announcements, and Freud's bouts of coughing. Freud's Last Session, the runaway hit play by Mark St. Germain, now in its second successful year in New York, is now in session at the Mercury Theater, 3745 North Southport, through November 11th. Freud's Last Session won the 2011 Off-Broadway Alliance Award for Best Play. And on the line with the right now is the playwright, Mark St. Germain. Mark, I'm going to give a phone number for the Mercury Theater if people would like to come out and get some tickets. It's 773-325-1700. Delightful chatting with you, and certainly congratulations on your great success. Let's keep on each other's radar, so if something else comes up or you come to Chicago, we can come on the show and chat about it a little bit.
I would love to. Absolutely.
And continued success. Thanks very much, Mark.
Thank you, Kevin.
Take care. Mark St. Germain, the very talented playwright of Freud's Last Session, running through November 11th at the Mercury Theater, 3745 North Southport. Great play. Very stimulating play. Intellectually stimulating play. If you have the opportunity, go down and see it. Again, for tickets, 773-325-1700. Well, maybe we're going to jump back into a little music from Lennon and McCartney again. Ramsey Lewis's A Hard Day's Night. We'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
Thank you.
Ramsey Lewis, A Hard Day's Night, and we're back on the Kevin Moore Show. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. Especially like to thank Bill Mendieta, who portrays Ricky Ricardo, Desi Arnaz, in the newest comedy hit, I Love Lucy, live on stage at the Broadway Playhouse, Water Tower Place, 175 East Chestnut, one block east of Michigan, through November 11th. For information, 312-977-1700. And delightful chatting with Mark St. Germain, the playwright of Freud's Last Session, running through November 11th at the Mercury Theater, 3745 North Southport. For information, 773-325-1700. Of course, a dialogue between the psychoanalyst Sigmund Freud and C.S. Lewis. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought every day at least to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week. And as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great day.
If we know we're always changing, why should it be the same? And tell me how, year after year, you're sure your heart will fall apart. It's time you hear. In your eyes I may not see forever. Forever. If we can be the best of lovers, yet be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, any luck then I suppose. The music, the music. Yeah.